guys, welcome back to the MedMoon podcast. I'm Emily, and I find this weird experience we call life completely fascinating. So I interview experts, teachers, creatives, and people with interesting stories so we can all make sense of what is happening here and how we can all enjoy the ride a little bit more. Just a quick reminder, if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a rating and a review. This will really help me grow this and bring you guys more amazing guests and more consistent content. All right, guys, I am so excited about this episode. This conversation is full of epic knowledge from the queen herself, Sahara Rose. Deepak Chopra wrote the foreword of her books and called her a leading voice for the millennial generation in the new paradigm shift. She is a best-selling author, host of the Highest Self podcast, the number one spirituality podcast on iTunes with over 25 million downloads. And she founded the Rose Gold Goddesses, a sacred sisterhood collective all about embodying the goddess within. She's a keynote speaker who has spoken on stages at Google and Facebook and for Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign. I mean, this woman is a total powerhouse. So enjoy my conversation with Sahara Rose.
Hello.
Hey, Emily. So good to be here.
Thank you for being here in your lovely home. It's beautiful. I love all the plants and the whole vibe is really nice. You have this amazing ocean view. People probably can't see it in any of these shots, but you can imagine that it's there as you listen to us. You can think about the ocean flowing in the background.
Yes. It's all about the vibe, right?
Yes. So I always like to start with having you just tell everybody a little bit about your story, the story of you and how you came to become the person that you are. Give us like the highlights and the moments and the fairy tale of you.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, growing up, my parents were both immigrants to this country, and I grew up with a lot of their, you know, expectations of what success looks like, sacrifice that has been done for our family, and really having this desire to make them proud and to make them happy. So, you know, I became a very ambitious kid, and that eventually led me to the path of activism, and that became just really, really important to me. I created an Amnesty International chapter and began volunteering in different countries around the world, and went to college to study international development with the plan to become an international human rights lawyer with a concentration in child sex trafficking and child labor.
Wow.
So I was working in DC with different refugee and immigrant associations, and it was there that I realized that I wanted to work by helping the people. I didn't want to just like raise money for the next fundraiser. I wanted to really be there. And I also felt like a lot of the efforts that were being made of like raising awareness for a cause, there was no like action being made. It's like, oh great, now we all know about this genocide or this big issue. Now what? Who's taking the action to help it? So I ended up feeling really helpless at a specific point. And also at that same time, I had been volunteering in India teaching health and sanitation in the slums, and my own health started to deteriorate. So at that time, I was following a more raw vegan diet, and I began to lose a lot of weight and lose a lot of hair. And from there, I began to have really bad digestive issues. Like I couldn't even eat food without having a stomach ache, which later led to anxiety, insomnia, all of these issues. I lost like 30 pounds and I had to start going to different doctors of, you know, figuring out what was wrong with me. And they kept just prescribing me other medications. So, you know, take IBS medication for your stomach. I lost my period for 2 years. So they kept saying, do hormone replacement therapy. And also that I would never be able to have kids because my body went into perimenopause at that point. So, you know, take antidepressants, take this, take that. And then all of these different medications, of course, would, you know, contradict each other. And intuitively I knew that I couldn't live my life just trying to take one medication after the next. I needed to get to the root cause of this. So that's when I began to study different ancient health systems. So I began studying Chinese medicine and Ayurveda. And of course I had heard of Ayurveda, but I never really looked into it. You know, my grandma would tell me things, but I never really took it so seriously. And so since I was in India, I decided to sign up for Ayurveda courses. And when I started to learn about Ayurveda, it was like relearning a language that my soul once spoke. Like all of the information, I was like, oh, this makes so much intuitive sense. And also reading about this archetype, this dosha called Vata, which is the air energy, and all of the issues I had, but also like my personality, my interests were all on this one thing. It's like, you're creative, you're idealistic, you love to travel, and also anxiety, bloating, constipation, lack of period, dry skin. I was having like osteoporosis symptoms, like all of that in like one archetype. So for the first time, I felt completely understood. So from there, I just was so hungry for all of the knowledge of Ayurveda, began studying it, but also was coming across ways that it didn't make sense with a lot of the scientific research that we have today. It was very heavy in dairy products, which are very different today, especially in the US than they are in ancient India. So I was on this journey to, you know, of course, follow the guidelines of Ayurveda because it was describing me so well while still making it work for today's, you know, very different climate, food system, et cetera. So that began my journey of learning everything and then, of course, healing myself and wanting to share it with other people. And I decided I would write a book about it because, you know, I just write a book. And, and of course, that journey of trying to write a book, which was a 2-year-long journey, led me to the path of figuring out my purpose, my dharma, and of course, the spiritual journey that came with unraveling all of the limiting beliefs, ancestral beliefs, societal beliefs that were unknowingly placed upon me when, you know, your parents, when you're a kid, tell you to follow your dreams, but when you're doing it as an adult, it's like, but how are you going to make money and this and that? So that really began my journey of, I'm so passionate about this thing, but I don't know what it looks like. I've never seen anyone that has done this before, and maybe I won't make it. So it was this long journey of who am I? What is my purpose? What is my truth? And now we sit here today that I wrote that book, which became the official Idiot's Guide to Ayurveda, book Eat, Feel Fresh, Yogic Path, and now Discover Your Dharma, helping other people find their soul's purpose too.
Wow. Yeah. That is amazing.
Yeah.
There, so much of that I resonate with as someone who's also just the most Vata there ever was. And when I discovered Ayurveda as well, at a point where I was so sick and like was eating very raw vegan, a lot of like light, fresh foods. And what I thought here in LA is like, oh, this is how you're healthy. And it wasn't working for me. And it was something that was really cool and a good shift for me as well. I'm curious, did you grow up spiritual at all, or at what point did the spiritual aspect of your journey come into all of that?
Yeah, so my family was not spiritual at all. My dad was like an MIT scientist, atheist, but I always had it within me since the time I was a kid. I was always like, you know, seeing things and talking about it, but my dad would always tell me like, be rational, be logical, like don't be like this. So it was sort of suppressed within me. And then when I was a teenager, I began practicing yoga, but I was much more focused with like, not knowing it was spiritual, but thinking yoga was more of a physical thing. And then for eating Ayurvedically, I was so focused on my physical health, but no matter what you're doing it and what your intention, it's still working deeper within.
Yeah.
So all of those, you know, those practices were actually chipping away at the falsehoods that I was holding on to.
Did you have a specific moment where like a light bulb clicked, or was it more of like a slow process?
You know, the specific moment that I decided to completely commit to living my dharma and living my truth was probably the hardest moment of my life. So after college, I moved to India. I spent that first year in India, you know, studying Ayurveda, trying to write my book, volunteering, and eventually went to Bali because I could feel even in India where I lived in Delhi, I wasn't totally free, especially as a woman. And I just longed to be, you know, in this beautiful, like, at one with nature, and I needed separation from like everyone that I knew, everyone around me, et cetera. So I went to Bali, got a one-way ticket, and ended up staying there for like 4 months. And at this time, my parents were they were fearful, but the fear showed up as like anger of, you're destroying our lives, you're ruining our family, you're so selfish, you only think about yourself. So I was at this crossroads of, is me living my life and living my truth hurtful for other people? You know, is it maybe like the Americans get to live their dreams, but I don't? And maybe this lifetime for me is about sacrifice. So it's this constant, you know, even though I'm in Bali, it's like the most painful experience of my life. Eventually I came back to Boston where my parents live. And there was this one just horrible fight with my dad that he was just like yelling at me, like, you are a complete loser. You're a failure. I wish you weren't my daughter. Like, you are a disgrace to our family. And just so like angry with me for for trying to live my truth, but as if it was like, I sacrificed everything for you, and this is now how you repay me. I wish I had never even done that. And I remember going downstairs to like my childhood like playroom and looking at the toys and being like, what was this all for? And just cry, like on the floor crying, like a come to Jesus moment, you know? And then I felt this like void within me, almost like this numbness of, okay, so if I'm dead to them, I might as well start living for myself. And then realizing how much all of my decisions were informed by like, will this make them happy? Will this, you know, get their approval? And now that I was essentially disowned by them, I don't have anyone else to live for by myself. And I actually needed to get to that level to realize that this life is mine to live. And I went back to India, but at this time I didn't feel any guilt about it. I didn't feel, you know, like I had to tell them, well, but I'm working on this and it's going to make money this way. And I was just like, this is what I'm doing. If you want me in your life, you have to accept me as I am.
Wow. Yeah. What a hard thing. I feel like so many people have to realize that. And so many of our wounds are, they show up through our parents and our relationship to our parents. But that's the work. Like that's the way through is through that wound and us healing it to step into who we are. I've heard you talk before on social media about that season of time in India and Bali and kind of incubating and learning and receiving. And I think it's something a lot of times we want to skip through or forget about. We're like, let me just decide I'm going to become this and then just be it, especially in Western culture where everything moves really fast. And 100%. So it's so important to have that season of like really figuring out, what am I here to do? Let me just slow down and like learn and live and receive. And I've heard you talk about just like dancing and like being on the beach and just really being present and all of that. And all that is what you now bring into your work.
And I think it's the unlearning, because we so focus on acquiring mental health knowledge, spiritual knowledge, this knowledge, but it's still that system of you're not enough, you need to acquire more things. It's like how our school system sets us up. And we have to actually actively go through this journey of, what is this belief that I'm holding on to? Is this mine? Where did this come from? Do I want to continue moving forward with this? And for some people, that takes completely stripping themselves from all of their, you know, surroundings, the people who may have triggered them, et cetera, to really realize how much of it you're holding on to as a person and that it's not yours. I remember when I first got to Bali, I would, because I had never seen someone just like go to ecstatic dance and yoga and like go to a kumbaya circle, I was like, do your parents know you're here? Are they okay with this? Like, it was so weird. I was like, are you guys on speaking terms? Like, I had this like weird hang up over that. And some of them were like, yeah, my parents come visit me here. And like others of them were like, no, I haven't spoken to them in 20 years. And I'm like, oh wow. But they've all gotten through whatever it was that they're living this. And now today I see so many people, especially with the quarantine, of living with your family again at all these different ages. In fact, in some ways, it can make you regress. You know, those same triggers that you haven't met are still there. The same limiting beliefs, expectations from your childhood, even though you're such a different person, that it can take setting really strong boundaries of like, thank you for giving me life, and this is now my life. And like, you know, I think we forget, sometimes we think our parents sacrificed so much, but that was their choice. Like, no one forced them to have you. That was their choice to have a child. That was their choice to move to another country or do whatever it is. And when you realize your parents are people who are also acting in accordance to what's best for them, you let go of this constant cord that you're like the puppet of their lives, and you reclaim your sovereignty, which is the only thing that you were born was to be your best version of yourself, not to be their idea of what's best for you. And now with these shows like Indian Matchmaking, I don't know if you saw it and things like that, you're like, wow, the enmeshment is real. And if you don't become conscious of it, you're going to look back on your life and be like, wow, I've forever lived for someone else's approval that I never actually received.
Wow. Yeah, that seems to be a big aspect of that culture and a lot of cultures, that it's like we have these expectations from other people in our lives, and we're living for somebody else. We're living as a supporting character in someone else's story, and we need to arrive into our story and be who we are. And if you really do that, and that's in alignment, then that fits beautifully into the whole, and it actually can help people a lot more than you just trying to be the helper to someone else.
100%.
So you have this book coming out in January, Discover Your Dharma. So let's talk a little bit about what is Dharma, and why should we find it?
Yeah, so the word dharma has over 16 different definitions in Sanskrit, but essentially it's your purpose. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about it, we're talking about your soul's purpose, which is different than just your career, right? It's not like my purpose is to become a lawyer, or a doctor, or an engineer. It's the unique expression that only you can carry to the world. Mm-hmm. And that can take many different manifestations. So for example, let's say your dharma was to bring beauty to the world, right? So you may have been an interior designer for some period in your life. You could have gone into becoming a hairstylist. You could have become a painter, you know, a florist, so many different things. And in fact, you could be kicking yourself of like, why can't I just stick to one thing? But actually that dharma, the expression, you think about it like a company's mission statement. Mm-hmm. It's to bring beauty to this world. And there's so many different ways that you can do it. Like yours, I would say you're bringing, you know, mental health and all of this wisdom to make your life better through media. You mm-hmm. can do it through your podcast, through your TikTok, through your videos, through interviews, through music, you know, mm-hmm. but it's all actually elevating consciousness through media. So yeah. We all were born with our dharmas, and according to Vedic wisdom, the Vedas are the world's eldest texts that originate in ancient India over 5,000 years ago, sister science of yoga, Ayurveda, that we were all essentially incarnated in this lifetime with our dharma. And that is essentially our soul assignment of what mm-hmm. we were meant to bring to this world, because we need all forms of beauty, of life, of truth, etc. So if we all naturally were passionate about different things, then it will feel easy to do your dharma. It's not like this, I had this idea that it's a sacrifice that you have to do. It's not a mm-hmm. sacrifice. It's actually your highest form of joy, and it's your highest form of service.
Mm, that's, I love that, because it's like you can be in service and serve yourself too. Yes. Like you can find fulfillment. That's something that's such a beautiful lesson. A lot of times we think about service or helping as sacrifice, as I have to do something that sucks for me in order to help someone else. But when you're really aligned with that, we're helping ourselves by helping other people. And that can happen exactly. simultaneously and beautifully.
Yes.
And in our wounds, because sometimes I've thought too, like I have to perfect myself before I can show up and serve. But sometimes our wounds and our healing process happens through finding that as well.
Yes. Yeah. So I like to think of it like, you know, this earth is a school, right? Mm-hmm. So your soul signed up for whatever curriculum it needed to embody your dharma. So you were born with your dharma, but you weren't born completely like embodying it into this world. You had to go through a series of lessons.
Yeah.
So it may have been, you know, being born into a family of addicts to see inside what does addiction look like? What is the mindset? What are the ups and downs? To have compassion for it too, because maybe that was part of your dharma to understand it at a core level to then go about healing it in whatever way.
Yeah.
So we essentially signed up for these obstacles because they make us see them from a deeper level. And then from that point of embodiment, we can notice those obstacles when they show up for us and not get triggered by them anymore. So for mm-hmm. me, the fact that my own family didn't believe in me had to make me strong enough to believe in myself.
Yeah.
And then if, I don't know, a TikTok hater or something says something, I'm like, yo, I dealt with a lot worse shit. Like, I'm good, you know? Yeah. But I needed that for the type of work that I'm doing.
Yeah, it's the whole obstacle is the way thing. Sometimes it's like, if only I didn't have this thing, then I could do this. But it's that thing that's actually aiding you. Everything is a grace. Everything is actually supporting us.
Yes.
Sometimes we can't see exactly how. And if we're caught up in like an egoic desire instead of that dharmic purpose, then it can be like, oh, this is keeping me from what I think that I want. Because we just can't see that it's actually supporting that.
Yeah.
So I've also heard you talk about how now, the importance of now being the time that we really need to step into that. Can you talk a little bit about why that is?
So I think everyone is feeling we're going through a massive shift. Mm-hmm. Their duality is at the forefront more than ever before. It's always been there, but now we can see it and we're talking about it and it's on our minds on a daily basis. So this needed to happen because these issues, racism, trafficking, et cetera, they are not new. They've always been there, but we've swept it under the rug for so long and have continued on this like, you know, matrix of everything's fine, everything's great, let's just keep going, the American dream, that because that collapsed for so many of us, so many people being unemployed right now, so many people having, you know, their restaurants or whatever they've spent so long building gone, that they're questioning things on a deeper level of, wait, if this system can be collapsed so quickly, what am I building towards? Mm. So we're realizing that anything that we build that's reliant on a system that is not stable by any means, that's actually an illusion, is not going to be permanent for us.
Yeah.
So we're reclaiming our sovereignty in this way and questioning, well, how can I serve in the greatest capacity, especially right now that needs for everything from joy to service to whatever are so needed than ever before. And on top of it, we're in this, you know, I think about it in the three doshas, in a kapha period of time. And kapha is that earth energy. It's that sacred pause. It's that inwards, like Eckhart Tolle really carries that kapha energy of just like really going inwards. And in a way, we needed to go on this global vipassana that like everything is closed. You can't hit the club anymore. You can't, you know, go shopping in your free time. That's gone, because we needed to go inwards and really question in this great sadhana that we're all in of when I emerge from this cocoon, what do I want to bring moving forward? So actually, this is the best time to ask yourself, what would my ideal life look like? What archetypes do I naturally carry? What interests do I naturally have? And then from this place of introspection, when, you know, the world begins opening up, or, you know, maybe you end a relationship, or you move, or you switch a career, or whatever it is, Where do I want this ship to sail? And had we not had this global pause, we would have just kept on going. And, you know, when you think about a ship, if it just steers a little direction, a different way, it goes to a completely other place. So these little shifts that we're making right now are really setting our sail towards a completely other direction. And if we listen to our truth, that direction can be our dharma.
Yeah, it's like the forced kapha, because we like wouldn't do it ourselves. So it's like, all right, y'all need to slow down. And like think, really reassess is like a time to look at like, okay, what have I been spending all my energy and time on? So we can get caught in that like rat race of chasing our own tail of like, I just need to make money and I just need to like do this thing. Yeah. And like you said, in building a system that can crumble, and we're seeing that for sure. I want to talk a little bit about what these doshas are for anybody listening and hears kapha. Oh, what is kapha? Can you explain a little bit more about Ayurveda and what are these doshas and how do they relate to us?
Yeah, so the doshas are, to me, like the ultimate lens that I view my life through. Once you learn about them, everyone you meet, you're gonna be like, Vata, Pitta, Kapha. Yeah. So they're based off of the five elements. And to make it easier, I'll just relate one to the main element that it's in. So Vata is the air energy. So if you think about an airy person, right, they are like creative, they're coming up with new ideas, they're idealistic. If you think about a bird, it has that bird's eye vision. It's seeing things from that higher perspective. It's moving. You know, the air, you can never really catch which direction it's going to go into. It's very spontaneous, versatile. So people who have a lot of Vata energy are like that, like yourself. You are creative. You're coming up with new ideas. Like if it were up to you, maybe you'd think about new ideas all day, right? That comes very easily to you because it's related to the crown chakra. The crown chakra allows you to receive, you know? And we all have this. We all have all three doshas, but certain people were born with more Vata because that's part of their dharma here. Part of their dharma is to be those idea channelers. Then Pitta is the fire energy. So like the energy of fire, it's sharp, it creates, it destroys, it transforms. So in our body, it's related to metabolism, digestion, any kind of transformation. It's related to really like heart, solar plexus chakra. It's like the activation, the heat. So people who have a lot of this, you know, think about a Gary Vee personality. They're like, let's get shit done. They like to set a goal and complete the steps to get there. They're, if you look at like their calendar, it's like color coded from start. It's like water break from 2 to 2:15. Like, you know, everything, like if you hang out with them, they're going to send you a Google Cal and have you confirm. And if they're going on a walk, they want to know, okay, where are we walking to and back? It's just very directional. It has a bit more of that masculine energy. And some people were assigned with that too, because it's that energy of creation. It's okay, here's the idea. What do we need to do to bring it to life? Mm-hmm. And all of them have a shadow side too. So the shadow side of the pitta could be like the constant doing, 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 and not asking yourself why, and also not resting. The shadow side of the vata can be being paralyzed by all of the ideas that you end up doing nothing, because the moment you try to take action, you have a new idea, and then you're like, I don't know which idea is better, right? So from the vata, we all have to move into the pitta. From the idea, we have to pick one and take action. Then from the pitta, we got to move into the kapha. So the kapha is that earth energy. It's grounded, it's peaceful, it goes with the flow. I think of Oprah, mm-hmm. right? Like, we love Oprah not because she like went on stage and gave a riveting talk. Like, that's Tony Robbins. He has a lot of pitta. And if you can see even in his decisions, it's like walk on fire, you know? It's like he loves that transformational energy. Whereas the kapha, it's much more about acceptance. It's much more about finding peace where you are. So a lot of spiritual teachers from Ram Dass, Eckhart Tolle, Deepak Chopra, Amma the Hugging Saint, and so many more have that kapha energy, because it's like, it's so peaceful, right? Mm-hmm. Oftentimes you can even see it by the shape of someone's face. They tend to have like a rounder face to them. Think like Muji, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of these figures that it's just like this like warm, like grandmother, grandfather like energy. Mm-hmm. And this is the energy of, in terms of an idea of grounding it, of having it relate to people, connect to people, and also become its own movement, take its own legs. So people who have a lot of this kapha energy, they like to work one-on-one with people. They like to really dive deep, ask questions, listen. So they wouldn't be happy like maybe starting a group online coaching program where they like never get to see anyone. Mm. They want to be like one-on-one, like guiding people, holding their hand through that transformation. And that's actually how they feel empowered. So think about, you know, a teacher, a nurse, a life coach, etc. But they can also get stuck because sometimes they are very empathic, that they don't have strong emotional boundaries with others. So they can feel like they're carrying the weight of everyone around them, which translates into weight physically. So feeling really like heavy, lethargic, physically gaining weight, especially in the lower body, because you're too anchored. So the kapha's got to move into the vata. So it's like this cycle of, they got to start dreaming big. Like, if I could create anything, what is it that I want? Like, I went on this retreat called This Is 50. It was for women in their 50s. I had a great time, but but it was all like these women who had given their lives to like raising their kids and making sure their families were okay. And now here they are in their 50s and they're like, I don't even know who I am and what I want. So if like a Gary Vee came and was like, you got to be posting 3 times a day, like that would have been too intense for them. But instead it was just about like, what would your ideal life look like? Your body, your home, your relationship, your this, your that. And from that space of like air and possibility, you'll naturally get excited, which is the energy of vata, excitement. And then from there, move into action. From action, move into the sacred pause. From the sacred pause. So it's this beautiful cycle that we can see through the chakras, and we're always in it, but we were just born with stronger capacities in certain doshas, and that's what we tend to get stuck in.
Wow, that is like the best explanation of doshas. Actually, you probably have done it many times. You've kind of wrote a whole
many
book
lifetimes,
about it.
Yeah.
But that I mean, I've studied a lot about it, and I feel like I just gained a better understanding of it from that.
Well, because it's so much more. I think when we think about Ayurveda, everyone just speaks about it with like nutrition, you know, maybe meditation or something. But I see it as your true compass of living your highest life. And if you can always look at this as a compass of what dosha am I at, what comes next, and direct your energy that way, you'll never get stuck.
Yeah, and I feel like I've heard it a lot in like, oh, you need to balance and like find what you're lacking in.
And that's a myth. You can never be all balanced of all three, because they juxtapose each other. Sometimes you're in a pitta season, and ride that pitta season until you can feel you're getting burnt out, and then move into the kapha.
Yeah.
And then until you feel too heavy, move into the vata, but keep it flowing.
Yeah, which I love that, because it fits with life, which is changing. It's seasonal. Like, sometimes we're in a different season than another time. And a lot of what I found true in my own mental health journey is acceptance, and not trying to just constantly fix myself or be different or make sure I have this perfect balance, but being like, all right, this is what I'm in. And like you said, ride the wave of that. Yes. And I love thinking about it in terms of purpose too, of like, what do I naturally bring to the world and how do I align that with what I'm doing?
Yes.
That's so good.
And for me, you know, I had to learn Ayurveda from my health problems because otherwise I wouldn't have never gone through that path. Yeah. And then when I saw it, I'm like, wow, I can actually look at any project, any potential thing I want to do and look at it from the lens of this doshas and see how is this fitting with me, right? Yeah. Like I used to have all of these different ideas. I had this like clothing line at one point that was, you know, something I was very passionate about, but it was very pitta, right? Mm-hmm. So even though I loved the idea of it, it was not in alignment with where I was the strongest. So I'm like yeah. you, more vata energy. So now that I know that about myself, anything that I'm interested in doing, will this align with my natural ability to come up with ideas, or am I going to be kind of really stuck in the day-to-day doing? Because there's some people who love that and who thrive at it.
Yeah.
And like, those are the people who should be doing it. So it's amazing because it frees yourself from this idea that for me to live my purpose, I have to like hate my life.
Yeah. Or be something that I'm not.
Yeah.
Because too, if you have an understanding that we all are aspects of the same whole mm-hmm. and see through that illusion of separateness, then there's no need for me as an individual to become everything. Yeah. Like I just need to play my part. I mm-hmm. just need to be the cog in the machine that I am. And we can allow everybody to bring their own uniqueness to yes. the whole. And that is something that just has so much more ease and love to it than mm-hmm. trying to shift. And looking at it in that perspective of what am I choosing to do with my life, with my career, with my dharma, and to align even that, like even being someone creative, it's more helpful for me to look at, okay, what can I do with my creative business that is more naturally in flow with the way that I am and where my energy comes from, instead of forcing myself to do it a certain way that maybe doesn't fit me as much.
100%. And I think that we see other people doing things in a certain way and we yeah. think that must be the way, right? Mm-hmm. Like some people have completely open days in their calendar. Some people have like really, really busy ones. And then you could look at someone else and feel envious about them. But the more that you know yourself, yeah. the less confusion there will be. And also the more that you know yourself, the more your dharma naturally unfolds, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's not like this thing outside of you. And it's also not a stagnant endpoint. It's not like yeah. I found my dharma, I'm good.
Yeah.
Chilling out. Like it's always evolving and it's always changing because it's going to take many different iterations and forms. Mm-hmm. And who you are right now, you know, you could live your dharma to its fullest expression, but you as a soul will naturally be at a different stage of your journey next year, yeah. causing that dharma to be at a different stage in its journey. And sometimes you go through this process with one dharma. Let's say you have a CBD chocolate company, right? Mm-hmm. So you come up with the idea, you take action on it, you bring it out to the world, and then you might go through the phase again. Maybe we're going to bring new products in, maybe this. And sometimes it's guiding you to something else. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that you're a failure or a bad person. Some people are meant to work on one project their whole lives. They have yeah. more of that kapha sticky energy. And some people are actually meant to be stewards and ushers for ideas. Bring it to life. Okay, you're good. I'm here to bring the next idea to life now. Mm-hmm. So knowing that about yourself makes you really drop the guilt.
Yeah, definitely. And being able to then delegate in a way or bring people in that can bring the energy that maybe you're like, I'm bringing this, so let me bring someone on my team that's bringing that, yes. so then I can have them do that. And just working in a more collaborative way.
For sure. Yeah, it's the ultimate tool for like working on a team together, hiring, I mean, even relationships, right?
Yeah.
Because we always need a balance, even let's say in a business partnership, right? Like if both people were very vata, it's mm-hmm. going to be like, but I have this idea and I have this idea. And there's not going to be a lot of like the taking action, like the setting up of the plan and the like customer service and this and that. So yeah. we need to see all three, even in a romantic relationship, if it's two like very pitta people, they might get very competitive with each other. Maybe there needs to be more kapha chill energy. So it's like always finding that balance, and doesn't have to be in any given moment. It's at the whole.
Yeah. And it accounts for the fact that there's not one way to do anything for mm-hmm. every single person. And that's what I love about looking at health through that lens mm-hmm. is I felt like, oh, this is the way that you eat healthy. If you're not raw vegan, then you're not doing it right. And it's like learning that, oh, my body is different and it has different needs and I can eat according to my body. And mm-hmm. it kind of pushes you towards trusting that intuition, which is another thing that I always talk about in regards to mental health, that there is no one way to take care of your mental health. You mm-hmm. have to listen and learn to trust yourself and trust your own instinct, and what worked for somebody else might not work for you. Mm-hmm. And that is the same across all aspects of life, our careers, our physical health, our mental health. We have to learn how to trust our own journey and what we're doing, because we're all different. We're all different people with different purposes, different bodies. We're all like looking at the same thing. We're all part of the same thing, but all from different perspectives. And that's beautiful. That's what we're here mm-hmm. to do. So
it's like, we're all at the talent show, right? If we yeah. all perform the same Britney song, it wouldn't yeah. be very fun. We all yeah. kind of diversify it. Someone gets to juggle. Someone gets to do this. And that's what makes a talent, a gift, a gift. If we all mm-hmm. had the same thing, it wouldn't be special anymore.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Hey, so maybe you love listening to me interview people, but you're like, Emily, I love what you talk about on TikTok and YouTube and Instagram, and I just want to hear more of what you have to say. Well, luckily, you can. I record a weekly monocast where I talk about what I've been learning, reading, and researching. I answer your questions and dive deeper into topics, tools, and resources to support your mental health and well-being. But your girl got to make money somehow, so this podcast is available for my club members only. It's very collaborative. I make each episode based on what my members want to hear. So if that sounds like something you'd be into, join the club. It's $5. People always say that's the cost of a coffee, but I live in LA and that shit's like $8. So I'm offering you wisdom for less than a hit of caffeine. All right, patreon.com/metamoon to join. Link is in the show notes and on my socials as well. Let's get back to the conversation.
So another thing that you talk about that on this podcast, we're all about like demystifying things that might feel kind of weird or elusive. And so another thing I'd love to talk with you about is chakras, mm-hmm. because that's something I think a lot of people, myself included, at a certain point in my life, I'm like, what is that? Is that real? Is it made up? Is it some woo-woo thing? What does that mean for me? What do I do with chakras? Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about how chakras relate to everything else we've been talking about?
Yeah, so chakras are wheels of energy in the body, and it's from Vedic wisdom, but also shamanic wisdom, Chinese medicine, they all see that there's these different energy centers, and they're related to both physical as well as emotional and mental symptoms, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll start with the root chakra. So the root chakra is located at the base of your spine, and it's essentially, if you think about Maslow's hierarchy, it's the first one of survival. Do I feel safe? Do I feel secure in my body? So for example, someone who doesn't feel secure in their body, and a lot of root chakra has come up in 2020 because we, mm-hmm. you know, the food, this toilet paper shortage, you know, let's look at the toilet paper shortage, for example. That's a root chakra. Yeah. We're like, I don't feel safe, so I need maximum toilet paper to clean my root chakra because I don't feel comfortable in my body. It's like, it's like literally right there, you know? It's interesting. Out of all things, like, we didn't go for shampoo. We didn't go for, like, toilet paper, you know?
Yeah.
In fact, most of the world doesn't use toilet paper. In India, they yeah. don't use toilet paper. You yeah. know, it's like actually not even a real need, but we're so afraid of our bodies and what, you know, comes out of them that we're like cleanliness, sanitation. And that's our fear of the root chakra, which is our fear of the earth. The earth is our ground. The earth is our home. And most of us, you know, we don't spend any time outside with our shoes off. We don't touch the soil. We're grossed out about all of those things. And that's also this blockage in our root chakra of feeling unsafe in our homes, in our bodies, in our wombs, right? So when it's balanced, you feel that. If you look at, you know, African dancing and, you know, drum circles, etc., the root is related to the jaw. So their mouths are very open and wide. And also when they dance, their knees are bent, open, spread. They're connected to the earth because they have this feeling of connection. Whereas if you look at an American culture, it's very like knees straight, jaw super, super tight because it's this fear of the earth. So that often stems from childhood of not feeling safe and not feeling secure, but it's something that through grounding, root chakra, mantras, meditations, etc., you can bring into balance. And it's related to the color red. So the sacral chakra is located like your navel, and that's in charge of sensuality, creativity, abundance, pleasure, like all of the joys of life. So when it's balanced, you're able to give and receive love and have harmony with people and play and have touch. And you're also feeling more creative and also more abundant too. That's related to that same frequency. But for a lot of people, it is blocked. So you... have a hard time with your sensuality. You have a hard time just being like playful. Like think about the energy of salsa dancing, right? Mm-hmm. That's very sacral of like, you know, you're playing a game. It's like this like tug and pull. Like Latin culture is very sacral chakra, whereas like shamanic culture is more root chakra, right? So even dances, yeah. You can see the chakras related to it. So when it is blocked, you'll feel like just out of touch with your sensuality, out of touch with your pleasure and your body. So I had my birthday this year, a sacral chakra birthday, because it's my theme of this year. So I like had like flowers and we danced and we like got dressed up and like let ourselves be in that, you know, childlike joy, yeah. Right? And that's related to the color orange. So these flowers here are very sacral chakra.
Yeah, beautiful.
And then the solar plexus is related to your ability to do, to create, to take action. So when it's strong, you have that pitta energy of like, you have an idea, you take action on it, you're not stuck, you know, you're someone who's like every single day taking strides towards what it is that you want to create. However, for a lot of people, it is an excess. So they're constantly doing, constantly performing and not asking themselves why. And for other people, it's depleted. So when it's depleted, you'll feel like I just can't take action on anything. Like I see all these people, they're doing things every day. I just feel so heavy and so stuck. So any chakra can be balanced, depleted, or excess. So it's not just like balanced or not balanced. It could be too much or too little. So, you know, when you think about like an egotistical person, that's someone who has very excess solar plexus energy. When you think about someone who's like very like meek and like afraid, that's not enough solar plexus energy. So that's like your powerhouse there. Belly dancing is very solar plexus. And if you think about Middle Eastern culture, it's like the line dancing, the like, hey, look at me, I'm here. And like, that's that very solar plexus energy there. It's the energy of the sun. And it's related to yellow. Then heart chakra is related to compassion, universal love. So not romantic love, but like your ability to genuinely have love for all people. So when it's open, you feel the sense of oneness. Like even if someone like messes up or like does something that triggers you, you could also understand and have compassion to why they did that. You're not like judging them. You're like, okay, I could get they've gone through this and they've gone through that. And there's less of that harshness, less of that like, you know, screw that person, more of that like, I get you, I feel you. And also those moments when you meditate that you just feel like complete love and connection and gratitude for your life and everything in it, that's because your heart chakra has opened. So when it's blocked, and this happens to all of us through heartbreak, through, you know, loving someone and them not meeting our expectations of what that meant, it closes. So it does take work to bring it back open again and realize that you can trust. So anything like a back bend in yoga is really good. Even when you meditate, I love to just place my hand on my heart and like focus on, you know, the energy. And now there's so much scientific research with the HeartMath Institute, et cetera, of like our heart literally is a brain inside of us and taking action more with the power of our heart. And if it's too open, which I don't think most people have the problem with, it's like, you might have a lack of even separate, like Byron Katie, I think speaks about how she like went through this incredible spiritual transformation. She's like, I don't even exist. I'm one with everything. Like her heart chakra just blasted open. And honestly, what I did realize when I was in Bali and I came back was it was a bit difficult for me to remain with such an open heart in this world, because it's like, you're so open-hearted and someone like honks at you or looks at you in the wrong way. Like sometimes when you're so open-hearted like that, you can just like take it a lot and get very sensitive. Yeah. So it's also that ability to know again, when to open up and when to have, you know, those clear boundaries too. Mm-hmm. And it's related to green, so nature. Throat chakra is related to your expression, your ability to take an idea and bring it into words or form. So, you know, those people who, you know, I'm sure you get this all the time of like, that's exactly how I thought, but you put it to words. Like, how did you do that? Well, that's because your throat chakra is balanced. So you have this ability of like feeling something and expressing it. But a lot of people, the number one fear in the world is public speaking, you know, like they're so afraid of going up there and not knowing what to say. And if you think about it, it's a made up fear, because you never have speaker's block when you're like talking to your best friend or like in your random life, you know, but it's this fear of, you know, if I have to express like myself to a group of people, I'm not going to be able to find the words for it. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think a lot of us, especially if you've been in an abusive relationship or something, you've been, you know, kind of like reprimanded for speaking your truth. So you feel like it's not safe for me. So again, singing is really good. Writing in journals, recording yourself on video speaking, maybe just put it up in a Facebook group or something, just practicing sharing your truth as much as possible. Because again, the only way through a fear is to like actually go do the thing. Mm-hmm. So when your throat chakra is blocked, you won't have the ability to do that. When it's excess, it's like you can't stop talking and maybe you're not listening too much and you're just like, maybe you're like word vomiting. Like you can't, like sometimes you do have to have that ability to know like when should I speak and when should I not. So it's having a balance of the throat, not excess, not too little. And that's related to the color blue. And then the third eye, which is our pineal gland. It is, you know, the rice-shaped gland inside of our brain that is in charge of consciousness. So, you know, it's fascinating because so many different cultures had this idea from like ancient Egyptian Kemetic culture to Vedic culture, shamanic culture of like this eye, this mm-hmm. brain within ourselves. And that's your ability to see the unseen, to know, to be able to read between the lines. So it's like when you're texting someone and like they text you right away and it's like you just like telepathically communicated for a second, or even though someone might be saying all the right things, you have a feeling that something's off with them, or you walk into a room and you're like, something's feeling different about here, maybe a fight just happened. So we all have this intuitive ability. Every single person is an intuitive, but as children we were told, oh, don't be so imaginative, oh, that's not real, oh, this, yeah. that, so we close it up. So when we open up our third eye, we can again see the unseen, feel the unfelt, and notice that we are connected in much more ways than our five senses. But like, you know, we right now, and for everyone listening, we're all sharing energy right now. We're all like, we're all connected by a frequency. And then also paying attention to how many cords do I have connected to me? Maybe I'm still connected to my ex. Maybe yeah. I'm still connected to the parents' approval. And like just having the awareness of where am I taking my actions from? Where am I giving and receiving my energy? So you mm-hmm. can clearly direct it towards what it is that you want. And so meditation is the ultimate tool for opening your third eye. There's really nothing else like that. And just being in that void, being in that sacred pause. And then naturally what happens, and this is related to the color like purple, indigo, what happens when you open up your third eye is naturally your crown chakra, which is, you know, typically white. They think about it like a thousand-petaled lotus. It opens up, and that's related right, you know, a couple inches above the top of your head, and that's your ability to channel. So when someone says, oh, I got a download about something, like a download means I just received an idea. And we're all getting downloads all the time, and that's why, you know, often when you're like doing your dishes or going for a walk or in the shower, you're like, how do I have all these ideas? Well, you know, you finally gave yourself a break from doing yeah. all the things that you're doing to receive it. So that's why it's so important to take times to be bored. You know, we don't do that enough in our society. Every time you're waiting for an elevator, you're in traffic, even maybe you're on your phone, and you're like blocking the ability for your crown chakra to receive. Mm-hmm. So when your third eye is open, you can hear the whispers from your crown chakra, and then you bring the idea through your doshas. You receive the idea, you intuit it through your third eye. Is this idea for me? Do I want to take action on it? You speak it into existence. Maybe you write a business plan, you write a book proposal. You talk about it to your friends. Then you feel it through your heart. Who is this going to help? How am I going to serve? You know, getting the passion for it, igniting that flame. And then from igniting that flame of feeling so much love for what it is you're doing, you naturally want to take action. You know, it's mm-hmm. almost like you slingshot it back. You can't help but to take that action. And then from taking that action and that sacred doing, which is also a beautiful thing to do. I think in spirituality, we're like, be, don't do. It's like, no, you need both. But from that sacred doing, you naturally, if you find the pleasure, you find the joy, you find the fun in it all. And then the root chakra, you birth it out. So it's like the three doshas are connected to these yeah. larger seven chakras. And again, we're in this constant cycle.
Wow. That's amazing. And what I'm hearing in all of that, what it made me think of in terms of kind of wounds and trauma is that closing happens when we feel unsafe. Yes. And literally all of those things. It's like if something made me feel like it's not safe yep. to speak or to love or to have pleasure or any of these things, be connected to the earth, then we close down. And so in order to be open and flowing, we have to feel safe. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of times in these centers in our body, that can correlate to where we're holding a lot of these fears and trauma. And so mm-hmm. we have to work through work through where we're afraid and where we're kind of closing off in order to be fully embodied.
Yes.
So how does that connect to the concept of embodiment and how we can fully express our full self in our bodies?
So I think embodiment is going to be this next big craze, right? Because right now, I think a lot of people, you know, they went from, okay, I got to drink the green juice. Well, why am I drinking the green juice? To like be happier. And like, why do I want to be happier? And it's like, we're right now in this phase of acquiring a lot of information, right? Mm-hmm. You want to read all the spiritual books and get all the mental health and all of this and all of the, that. But the thing is, we're getting to this tipping point that we know so much, so many different theories, so many things of what I'm supposed to do, but are we embodying it? Are we living it? Mm. Are we the walking examples for it? So what I noticed were so many people who had all of, you know, got their PhDs and whatever it was, were they living that truth? So that comes into just taking something, and it doesn't mean all of it, but anything, and actually living it. So for example, you know, I have a deck, Oracle card deck, and I was pulling cards every day, but I was like, you know what? If I just really embodied one of these cards, one of these principles, and fully embodied it, that would be enough.
Yeah.
But here we are every day. Oh, it's the new thing. And it's like, that's, again, it's our ego of wanting, like we're taking even a concept like spirituality and quantifying it, putting steps, mm-hmm. putting measures. And it's the ego wanting to own something, to become the best at it. And that's not what it's about. Your net, like, some of the most, and there's no such thing as most spiritual, but I say most connected to their consciousness, most connected to their souls. They're illiterate. They've never even read a text before. They have. So I think because we've grown up in the system of like, we need all the information to believe something. We need all the facts that we're like, yes, I want to see that the science can prove that breathing is good for me. I want to see the research. I want to see this. But it's just the ego that wants it. You know, you don't really need it. If you just go and do it.
Yeah.
The information is not there.
The research is there because of like observing what is.
Exactly.
Like research and science is observation. It's saying, oh, this is happening consistently among a lot of time or a lot of people. And so we're going to make an idea of like, this is how this is until it's not. And it changes.
Exactly.
So it's only you're stuck in the observational instead of going into the source of all of that.
Exactly. And I think that we also, in a way, you know, procrastination is related to fear of like, I'm not ready to go and do that thing that I want to do. I need more information. We were talking about like a lot of people, they want more certificates, more courses, more this, more that. Did you take full action upon that one course that you took, that one book, that one quote, that one word, that one gesture? Because that would be enough.
Yep. Feel called out right now. This is my lesson. You're channeling a message for me. I only know it because I had to
figure it out for myself because I was totally that person.
Yeah, it's been such that journey for me in quarantine because I feel like I'm gonna take this opportunity to really like learn and grow, and like it's been difficult and a beautiful lesson for me to be like, can I just like be in this and not have to like maximize it or make the most of it or like come out the other end like ahead, you know?
Just, and like we're all on this ladder of, and different ladders of knowing different amounts of things and different subjects. So it's like wherever any person who is even listening to this podcast right now is much farther along on that ladder of self-inquiry than 99% of people, I would say. So where you are right now is enough. That doesn't mean don't keep striving, don't keep learning, but also realize where you are right now is enough to reach down and help someone else.
Yeah, and it's always that, like, what we're constantly chasing and looking for is actually always there, and it's always available in the present moment without any thoughts or information or knowledge. It's just in the being, and that's something that I've come to really understand in a lot of my deepest moments of meditation, like bliss, is, oh, I don't have to like figure it out and dissect it and understand every little piece to then be free.
Right.
It's like that's a mechanism that we almost made up to convince ourselves to just open our hands, and all we had to do was open them.
And I think we see this happening right now in terms of like politics and conspiracy theories. Is like the ego's like, I need to figure it all out and get to the bottom of it and this and that. And it can never happen because there's so many contradicting experiences and timelines and reports and this and that you will spend the rest of your life trying to figure it out and look back and realize you still don't know anything.
Yeah, and you can't, because you're a piece of all of it. And it's that thing of like, you can't what we're chasing and trying to find through the mind. Like we're using the mind to try to accomplish something that the mind can't do.
Exactly.
Which is discover our own selves. Mm-hmm. You can't see yourself. You have to just feel, oh, I am that. Like I am the source. I am the one that's creating all of it. And that can't be done through the mind or through like an ego saying, now me, Emily Capshaw, has like discovered it all, mm-hmm. you know, but because I'm within it. I can't hold it. I can't hold what I'm within.
Exactly. And I think that we are, as a society, getting to that point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've gone through so many different loopholes this year of 2020 and spent so much time. And I think now a lot of people are like, okay, what is in my control? Like my everyday actions, the lives that I affect, and like reclaiming our power in this beautiful way. So this is an invitation for every single person right now listening of like, what have you experienced? And how can I share that? You know, maybe you ended a narcissistic relationship, or maybe you moved to a new state, or maybe you, you know, figured out how to make a business on Etsy. Like, how can you just share that? And it could just be with one other person and start from there. And it's through the action that we learn and we refine. You know, I think we like wait for our minds to have this like clear map of like how it's going to work. And it never actually works out that way. So just start, just take step towards that next chakra, take action, keep moving, find the flow, find the joy. And the next path will just reveal itself to you.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. That's so beautiful. Well, to close this out, I have these fun little rapid fire questions. Mm-hmm. So they're rapid fire in the sense that the answers can be short, but they're definitely still deep questions. Okay. So you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. The first one, what could you eat for a week straight?
Oh, I love this vegan acai mousse from Erewhon. I eat it all the time. Oh,
that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
If an alien asked you right now to go to space, but you might never come back, would you go?
No, I don't even want to go to space. I'm much more of a mermaid.
Amazing. So if a mermaid said, come live with
I'd be
people,
down.
What would you reincarnate as?
Just hopefully a spirit guide in the next life, you know?
Done with the human
cycle. It's been a trip here, yeah.
Why do we hurt each other?
I think we hurt each other because we think it will prevent us from being hurt.
Mm, I love that. What is love?
Love is a feeling of unity with that which is all around you.
What is your current self-work?
Self-work?
Yeah.
I have been releasing my inner savior that wants to save and help everyone else.
That's a good one. What's the most helpful practice or discovery that you found on your mental health journey?
Definitely conscious dance, ecstatic dance, and movement for me has been the best. And I also really love breath work, like a Wim Hof style breath work.
Yes, that's good. We've been doing a lot of ecstatic dance lately too. It's very embodying.
Yes.
It's like as you transition from just like, oh, I'm meditating all the time, I feel like the dance has gotten me more in my body, which I love. What or who is God?
God, I relate more to goddess, and I think of her as Mama Gaia, Pachamama, the earth.
I love that. Why is there suffering?
There is suffering. You know, I ask myself this question like every day. I'm like, but like, why does it have to be, you know, it's like, I know the answer is like there needs to be duality and we learn from the duality, but I'm like, but why?
Yeah.
Who set this up?
Yeah.
So I still have not made peace with that answer.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Why are we here?
We are here to embody our dharmas through the path of service and joy.
I love that. And then the final question that I always ask is, if I told you right now on the other end of this microphone, the whole world was listening to you and you could tell them one thing, ooh, what would you tell them?
Listen to your heart, connect to your body, and let yourself be free.
Amazing. Yeah. I love it. Do you have anything coming up? You have your book coming out in January. Is there anything else coming up? What's next for you?
Yeah. So my book, Discover Your Dharma, if you want to dive into all these doshas and chakras and how it relates to purpose. And I also have my two other books, Idiot's Guide to Ayurveda and Eat, Feel Fresh, that are already out. And on my website, I have a quiz that you can take. So if you're like, I want to know more about my dosha, you can take this quiz. It's at iamsaharrose.com. It will break your dosha down into percentages in your mind, in your body, email you all this information. So it's a really good place to start.
I made our whole household take that quiz the other day.
Oh, cool.
It was fun. I was like, everyone take this quiz. I need to know what everyone is.
Yeah, it's so good because then you get to know people at a deeper level and be like, oh, I get to, you know, act this way because your coffin, this might matter to you, or Pitta, et cetera. So I think it's like, just like people talk about astrology, et cetera, we should all know everyone's doshas.
Amazing. Well, I'll put links to all of this in show notes if you're listening, or the caption if you're watching us on YouTube so everybody can find it. I'm definitely going to go read all your books now after Yay. This. So thank you so much. This was amazing. I learned so much. I hope everyone learned as much as I did.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Remember, you can always watch these interviews on the MetaMoon YouTube channel. And if you ever have thoughts, suggestions, requests, anything, just reach out to me on social media at emily.capshaw. Until next time, remember, you are safe, you are loved, and you have everything you need within you.